Hello, everybody. Welcome to another edition of Playing with Power. We're up to episode, I guess, 4. I don't really know. I don't keep track of this. I'm not very good at this part. Math really isn't my strong suit.
Weren't you a math teacher in high school at one point?
Yeah. Well, not in high school, but for a high school. Yeah. Yeah, I did. I was just making stuff up. Anyway, you heard him. Mike, Michael B. the Game Genie is here, and unfortunately, Stu could not be with us tonight. He had girlfriend duties that he had to take care of. So I guess it's kind of like, Mike, you're getting a makeup for Stu getting to hang out last time, so you're the man this time. And different than normal, we are, we can see each other this time, so there that might change some dynamics. We might laugh a lot more and goof off a lot more, so that's fun. How you doing, Mike? Go be the Game
Genie. I'm doing good.
Yeah. That was Mike.
Two mics.
We've got two mics. It's so much confusion. Mike Tindo is here. Why don't you just take the floor and explain what you do on your channel, your show, right, which is one of my favorite review series. So just
Thank you. Well, I'm Mike Tindo. I do a channel, and you can find it on YouTube if you just type in youtube.com/dongled. That's with a D at the end, not with an E at the end, because I have found that channel that I'm like, wait, this isn't my channel. But, yeah, so I do a review show called Dude, You Haven't Played This Game. The easiest way to find it is, honestly, just type in Dude, You Haven't Played This Game. You'll probably find it. So I've been doing that for about 2 years now. I also do a show called Pixel Tunes Radio with my buddy Ed.
Very cool.
And we do basically a video game music podcast. And we, you know, play music from video games and basically goof off, have a good time. And we even create these, like, fake silly commercials. So, and, you know, the channel has a host of all sorts of different stuff on there, too. Rants, pickups, like pickup vids. So I kind of do a lot of different stuff with the channel. I try to keep it fresh. It's tough when, you know, you've got a full-time job and you've got a girlfriend and you've got friends and, so you know, social stuff and life. And, I mean, I don't have to tell you guys. You guys understand it. But I try to put out a video every week. But sometimes it's difficult. But, yeah, that's pretty much my channel.
Excellent. Yeah. Trust me, I got 3 kids, wife. I live in a different county than my family.
Oh wow!
It's hopefully that'll change. We found a house that is within in our price range right now to rent. Hopefully that'll happen. It'll be really to get back together as a family unit again, instead of me crashing at mom's house at 32. It's just it's tough.
What a loser! Yeah. I moved out when I was 27.
I know. It sucks. Anyway, tonight we had a couple of different things on the agenda. I really don't know where to start, but
at the beginning.
Yeah. Well. Okay. Well, which one do we want to make, Mr. Burry? What would you like to make the beginning?
I can't remember what you sent out.
Focus.
Well,
focus.
Well done. Well done. Why don't we start with
YouTube?
Let's talk, because that'll be a good one. We were talking, me and you, Mike, Mr. Burry, we were talking about how there are a couple channels that exploded, got really big, and then have been accused of either, like, you know, the whole selling out argument, over-commercialization. Are there channels that we were talking about that, have lost interest in because it felt different now? Mike and Mike, what do you guys think? What do you got? Is there any validity to that thought process that maybe there is a little bit of a selling out mentality there, or what?
If I could jump in first, whenever I hear something like that, it always seems like sour grapes to me. Now, not you understand what I mean? Like it's not like, I'm not in a position, like, I don't have a massive, huge channel or anything like that, but the minute somebody jumps on somebody and says, oh, well, you know, I feel like their channel's changed since they got popular and stuff like that, to me, the first thing that jumps to my mind is there's a lot of people out there that, for some reason, whenever anybody else has some sense of success, They've got to break it down. They can't be happy for people, and I think there's a lot of people out there like that, and that kind of spreads. But yeah, there is some truth to it too. Sometimes, especially when channels, I found when they got partnered, they became a completely different animal, and a lot of things deal with their partnerships. Like, some of them have contracts to review specific games, and they change that way. So in that sense, I can see it. But a lot of times when I hear commercialization and I'm watching something and I'm like, it's the same videos and the same person. The only difference is now maybe they've improved their videos a little bit, added a little, you know, commercialization. Maybe they've got a little bit better. Maybe they've got a lighting kit. But a lot of these people have done so out of their own pocket to make their show better, to make it something that's bigger. So I don't know.
Yeah, I kind of hear you on that one. I mean, you also kind of catch yourself doing that on your own channel. Because like me, okay, so I don't have a lot of subscribers, honestly. And I know some people who have less than me will be like, oh, come on. But the thing about it is, I never looked at it, well, at least I don't look at it now as, well, I have so many subscribers, so I should be, I'm just grateful for what I have and that people actually are interested in what I have to say about games. I mean, I've been writing about video games since I was in high school. And this was kind of my passion. I grew up kind of being like, you know what? I'm going to work for Nintendo Power. And then they shut down. So, you know how that goes. But, you know, now that I have a chance to do something with my videos and my content, my reviews and everything, I feel like I have a way to put out that content to a massive audience. My big thing is I see people jump on these channels that They're kind of like, well, you know, they get all jealous. Like, oh, well, you know, you have a million subscribers. Well, okay, well, what are you doing to make your channel better? So I stopped looking at it like in a jealousy kind of way, because I would look at people's videos and I'd be like, my video is better than his. And so then immediately I would be like, I would get all angry and be all upset about it. But then you really got to think about it and be like, well, what am I contributing to this? And so, as soon as I changed my mentality, my channel, like, I got hooked on GameStar81's website, and, you know, he took me in, and then, you know, Retroware started putting my stuff on the user favorites and all that, and that's kind of when I focused more on making the show better. That's when the show actually became better and the subscribers were there. So now I'm kind of more like, I would say my major issue now is I'll look at these big websites that I'm posting stuff on and be like, now, why didn't they pick my video? And I'll kind of be like, well, you know what? Like, I'll stop myself and I'll be like, you know what? Maybe it just wasn't good enough. And I know that's like weird to say, because a lot of people are like, well, you should get mad, you should get pissed. Like LJN Defender, like, he does some amazing work. But sometimes I look at his videos and I'm like, man, like, he got picked. And I know that it's like that thing that you're like, man, he got picked, but I didn't. So you get kind of jealous for a second, but then if you stop and think about it, you're like, I shouldn't get jealous because he's a buddy of mine. Like, he's my friend, and I should be supportive of that. So that's, I think, the big piece and the big picture out of it is people who are not creative content people, who are just, like, watching or listening and are not inputting anything, have a completely different experience from content creators themselves.
That's true.
Yeah, it's actually kind of funny. Like, you mentioned, like, the website and getting picked. Like, I don't mean to go behind the curtain too much, but Chris, how many times have me and you talked about that?
Yeah, all the time.
Yeah,
and we compare to each other. Like, oh, yeah. I see you made it. Oh, yeah, well, you know, whatever. And you know, and you do, and you know, I don't know about you, Mike, but there is a little spark of jealousy but then you remind yourself, this is a buddy of mine. He's doing really well. That's good. I should be encouraged by that. And, you know, hey, you know, I might get some overspray here. You know, I mean, the fact that I hang out with the guy, albeit through this. But, you know, it might, I might catch a little bit of overspray on that, and that'd be good for me. And I'm fine with that.
Yeah. You know? Yeah. It kind of lifts your spirits. It kind of makes you, like, want to do better. What I was really bummed out about was when Mike B and I did the video, the episode, whatever I did with Eric Azebo. That video didn't take off. I was, like, shocked. I was like, all right, here we have all the combined elements. You've got, you know, somebody who's a little bit, who's, you know, obviously has more subscribers and will have a larger output. And then you've got Erica, who, you know, is, I guess, I don't know how to put it, like, she's very bubbly, very friendly personality, and I thought I had everything together in this perfect video, and, like, nobody watched it, and I was, like, crushed. So I'm, like, actually going to be doing an LJN Defender episode with, well, it's going to be a Dude You Haven't Played This Game episode, but it's going to be with Matt Ezra with LJN Defender. So that's going to be episode 27. And so I'm really looking forward to that because I can throw it up on, like, Screw Attack and be like, oh, you guys seem to really love LJN Defender. Check out my stuff, too, you know? And, like, not use Matt, but, like, Matt's really awesome and I've always supported his channel. So I'm not really, like, riding coattails. I'm more like, hey, Matt and I are in this together. Like, let's... That's the thing. We all kind of help each other out. So when we help each other out and it fails, that's when I'm kind of like, oh, man, like, we all work so hard at this... this big video and it didn't work out, you know, that's when I'm bummed.
Yeah. But now at the same voice, I guess we can also play devil's advocate here a little bit because there are a few channels that, mm-hmm. I mean, what am I doing to make my videos better? That's a very valid point. But at the same time, there are channels that completely change. There are channels that you can tell that there has been a shift in their mentality, I guess. And I think it goes back to what one of you guys said about being partnered. You can kind of see that shift happen and sometimes it kind of does. I mean, yeah, the money is there and you can make money doing this. I mean, not a whole lot unless you're like cranking out views left and right. But I mean, at my level, I ain't making any money, you know?
Yeah. I'll tell you, even when you're cranking out views, you have those huge months where you get like, you know, 100,000 views. You're still not making any money.
Yeah.
Yeah. That's why I'm kind of like, I look at like the Game Chasers and they're doing like an awesome job with getting people to buy their DVDs. And I think it's great because I just saw their new volume 2 and I didn't buy volume 1. I'll be honest. Like up front, it slipped my mind. I was like, oh, I'm going to pick that up. And I just didn't. And it wasn't that I didn't want it, but it was like, I guess I was kind of more like, I didn't really see the value in it. And so, and then I saw a bunch of reviews on it, and I was like, oh, man, I should have bought it. Like, damn.
Yeah.
And now their second volume, I don't know if you guys have seen it, it looks really cool. And I'm like, that's the right way to make money, is to put out, first off, they do an amazing show. They have solid content on their channel and everything. And then for them to put together this very thorough DVD with tons of Easter eggs and all this, like, really cool package, it's just like, that's awesome. Like, that's what I want to do with this.
Yeah.
So. Cool.
I gotta say, like, just for a second on the Game Chasers DVD, like, to me, like, when a YouTuber sells a DVD, I've always not bought it, and it's not because I don't want to support that person.
Yeah.
It's just, all their videos are on YouTube. Why am I, double paying for something that I can watch at home? And I bought the Game Chasers DVD because, I don't know, Keeb kind of pushed me into it, and I like the Game Chasers a bit. Anyways, when I got it, I was surprised at how much I enjoyed the actual DVD version. And I mean, they did put so much work into it. There's an extra never seen before episode. There's all kinds of extra features. And like, there's an actual documentary on the Game Chasers done by Rerez Shane. That's really cool.
I didn't know that.
Oh yeah, it's really well done. And it shows some behind the scenes stuff of, I guess, when they were just starting out. And, like, one part was Screw Attack posted their video to the front page, and all of a sudden they blew up a little bit. So they showed all that kind of stuff, and it was pretty cool. I gotta say, it wasn't just their episodes. Let's just put it that way. And it wasn't extras on the menus. There was a lot of extra other content that you wouldn't see otherwise.
Yeah. Yeah, that's kind of what I've been... I'm kind of with you on that, like, why would I pay for something that I can get for free? But at the same time, like, if you're going to put out some content that's actually worth picking up, then I'll spend the coin and get your DVD. And I don't know, I'm more kind of like, well, how far are you going to go with this? You know what I mean? Like, where's the line where you draw? My big thing is, you know, people that would not give you the time of day, and I haven't found a lot of that with people who are on the lower end of things, like the lower totem pole of YouTube. But you get these people that are, like, crazy high up, and they wouldn't even, like, return. Like, I think the Game Chasers were one of the few people where Billy would contact me, or, like, I would message him, and he would message me back, and I thought that was really cool.
Yeah.
Because I'm just this random dude who's like, I like your stuff, you know? So, I wish there was more of that, more community. Like, you can message, not to say anything negative about Pat the NES Punk or, you know, Happy Video Game Nerd. They're both amazing content creators. They've put out stuff that's pretty much influenced me left and right. And if you watch my show, it's pretty much a direct ripoff of their stuff in a lot of ways. And it's hard to produce content and be original because somebody else has been there first. So now you have to come up with your own original ideas. And so it kind of bums me out when I'll be like, oh my God, like, great video guys, or, you know, you'll try to interact with them on, like, Twitter or whatever, and nothing. You know, it's just like, oh, man, like, come on. At least acknowledge me.
But you can't always take all that personal. I know that.
True.
I mean, you can't.
They probably get thousands.
Yeah, right. Like, how much volume do they get probably every hour from crazy people like us? I mean, you know, I mean, like, I'm sure.
We are pretty crazy. Yeah.
I mean, I'm sure that it's exhausting even to read comments, let alone.
Yeah.
You know,
and I've met Pat, and I've met Derek, and they're really nice people. Like, I talked to Derek for like at least a half an hour about video games, and he was like, "Oh, come play Goldeneye. We're gonna go downstairs at MacFest and play Goldeneye." I'm like, "Okay." And same thing with Pat. Like, I met him at a bar at MacFest, and he was super, super nice. So I'm not at all saying anything negative about those guys. I'm with you 100%, Chris. I think that they just get bombarded because they're so popular.
What year MacFest?
What year? 2000... Let me think. I think it was 2012.
At the gate?
No, 13. It was 13.
I didn't go to that
one. Pretty sure.
I went the year before.
Yeah, because...
I was trying to see, like...
I did, too.
Oh, well, we just... Serendipity, man. We probably passed each other in the hall.
Yeah, I know, right? Yeah, I was going to go this past year, but... Just
funds went there.
Finances.
Yeah, same here.
I bought a house instead. Yeah. So
I lost a job, so
Yeah.
I think Mike touched on the point that a lot of people get their back up against is that you know, when channels are smaller, it's so much easier to connect with them, and because they don't have, you know, hundreds of other people contacting them all the time. But as they get a little bit bigger, maybe they don't have as much time to maybe go but check out other people's videos because there's so many people asking them to do that, or they don't have time to reach out to everybody, respond to every comment. And I think that's really, it's not so much just their success, but people feel they're not as a part of the community anymore.
Right.
Yeah. Maybe there's that aspect too.
Yeah.
There's also like they start with the community and then they kind of like disappear. Like they'll start talking to people and being like really friendly and answering all messages and stuff, and then they get big and nothing. I think that's a big problem. Because if you're going to start with the community, you need to continue with the community.
Yeah.
Like, don't forget your roots, you know?
And it may just be that they can't find the time, but they...
True.
I don't know how to do that, but there's got to be a way to work it in there, you know? Like, you know, it's a lot.
I think a lot, too, and this is just my personal opinion, I've noticed in life, in everything... You kind of want to root for the underdogs, so if there's channels that you think that, oh my god, I can't believe all these channels, you know, this channel doesn't have so many more subs, and then they start to get a little attention, people lose interest, and they kind of turn on that channel.
Yeah.
I've done it in my own life, like sporting teams, like the LA Kings, like before they won the Stanley Cup a couple years ago, they were one of the worst teams in hockey, and like when they won, I was like, that's awesome, good for them. But now, here we are 2 years later, they just won again, and I was like, oh, I really didn't want to see them win.
I don't know. I mean, well, Mike, you're kind of like, do you find it, you and I are about the same size channel. I have a hard time keeping up with crap as it is. Just at my size.
I'm overloaded.
And Mike, at your, like, you're kind of like the next level up kind of thing.
Yeah.
It's got to be tough to keep track of subscribers, who's popping in, who's keeping comments, who's... I mean, I can barely keep track of what's going on right now, you know?
Yeah. No, I agree. I've kind of... I used to look at the comments all the time and be like, oh, you know, what did people say? Like, oh, did they like it? Did they not like it? But I've noticed that ever since Google kind of, like, swallowed up YouTube and, like, turned it into this awful mess that it is right now, I've kind of noticed that the subscriber views and the views themselves overall have really dipped, like, big time. And actually, Billy from the Game Chasers was talking about this, too, online. He said the same thing when it first started. He was like, why is nobody watching our latest episode? And we all kind of were like, well, nobody's watching anything right now because everyone in YouTube... everyone on YouTube is like, what is going on right now, you know?
Yeah.
So, but with when it comes to, like, likes and comments and subscribes, like, I try not to overload my channel with it too much, and I always try to follow it up with, I'm so grateful, like, thank you so much for paying attention to, you know, what I do on here. Because I think if you lose that and you're more focused on getting the likes and getting the comments and getting the subscriptions, you kind of lose a part of why you're doing it in the first place, and that's to share who you are and what you're doing,
yeah.
You know?
Yeah.
It kind of makes it more like a popularity contest.
Not that I'm an expert or that I know everything, but I sat there, you know, at around 1,000 subs, between 1,000 and 2,000, and I used to talk to Chris, Weekend Game Guy, all the time, and I said, you know, how can I make this channel better? Like, what can I do? And I really did the reflective thing, Mike, that you talked about earlier, where I was saying, you know, my videos aren't getting picked to go on websites, and I kind of got bummed out. And I took about a month where I didn't do anything. I didn't make any videos, and I just really contemplated what I wanted to do on YouTube. And I didn't really do anything differently. I tried really hard to focus on whatever I did. I was going to do it as the best that I could. And I just stopped kind of worrying about it. And for some reason, through some serendipity, not that I blew up or anything, but I've noticed I've had a more steady stream of subscribers. It's like, when I stopped worrying about it, somehow that seemed to work somehow. I don't know.
Yeah. No, and you know what's crazy is, I mean, the amount of time that you spend, here's the most frustrating thing for me personally as a content creator. So I'll spend, like, God, like 8 to 10 hours on a video. And I'm talking about an episode of Dude, You Haven't Played This Game. So between gameplay footage recording, script writing, coming up with new ways to introduce props, getting friends to help out with stuff, like all my buddies, syncing up times and schedules and all that stuff, editing, voice recording, by the time you're done, I must sink at least 8 to 10 hours into an episode, minimum. The editing, of course, taking the longest amount of time. And I'll release it to the public, throw it on a bunch of websites, I'll get a bunch of, you know, feedback, and everybody will love the episode. Maybe, like, Retroware or, you know, Screw Attack or somebody, Gamester, of course, obviously, and that gets thrown up right on the page. But at the end of the day, by the end of the month, I'll have, like, 400, 500 views, and I'm like, alright, cool, people are liking it, people are viewing it, whatever. But I'll, like, record a 5-minute rant on Mega Man and, what's the video I did for Mighty No. 9? I did it like a 5 to 10 minute rant on just what I thought about the whole thing, and I got 4,000 views. And I'm like, I spent 5 minutes on that. Like,
yeah,
that was a joke video. That was like something I didn't even waste any time editing. I threw a soundtrack behind it, put it up on YouTube, and it blew up. And I'm like, are you for real right now? So that's what frustrates me the most, is the amount of time that you spend on one video versus getting blown up for something that you didn't even care about, you know?
That's a big reason that classic Weekend Game Guy rocking the sweater has not happened in a long time. And because it's a huge amount of work. I mean, it takes me a week to do it. At least a week to do it. And I just, the payoff is really tough to, I don't know, it's really hard to do that and then get no response at all from it. Not to sound like I'm complaining, but, you know, I've got to, like, lock kids back in their cages, you know, and got to make sure I change water bowls for them. Huge waste of my time, you know.
Is that what you do with your kids?
I thought that's what everybody did with their kids.
Yeah, but see, that, it, you know what, it can't be about that. Like, you got to stop sometimes and realize you're going to pour your heart and soul into something, and you're going to spend 20, 40 hours working on a video, and maybe, you know, 200 people will watch it, maybe 1,200 people will watch it. But at the end of the day, you got to make the videos for you, and you can't make it for it to blow up. Because if you're just making something in order for people to love it and people to come into it, do what Mike said. Just make some stupid video on the topic of the day, Mighty No. 9. Not saying your video was stupid, Mike.
No, I agree. It was stupid.
if you take a look at it and you look at all your videos, everybody has the same thing. The things that are the most, commercial are the ones that actually are the ones that are viewed the most. It's not that you got to do that all the time, but if you have something that's a passion, do it for you. Don't do it for the views.
Yeah, no, I agree. And that's kind of why I changed and made it more about the quality and making it more about what I was interested in. That's why when I came to you and I was like, I want to do Blades of Vengeance. Like, this is a cool game. And you were like, what? And I was like, no, we're doing it.
I was like, I don't even own Blades of Vengeance. You were like, just get an emulator or something. Hurry up.
Yeah, I was like, come on, man. But, you know, that's the thing. Like, I don't pick all the time games that people are like, oh, you should do this game, or you should do that game. I'm like, I'm going to pick this game because I want to do a review on it because it's a fun game and I think other people would like to see what it's all about. And that's really what you have to focus on.
If you want Weekend Game Guy to blow up, here's your reviews for the rest of the year. All modern games like Wolfenstein, The New Order, Call of Duty, and then do the really unheard of games like Secret of Mana and stuff like that. I mean, that's the thing. If you do want to blow up, be commercial. But if you want to do something for you and do this because you enjoy it, you're going to put a lot of time into it, and sometimes people aren't going to watch. It's nothing to do with you or us as individuals. You just got to realize there's 1,000 assholes out there like us doing the exact same thing, and it's so hard to get noticed above those people. You talk about Pat, you talk about the Happy Video Game Nerd. Sure, you know, they've got like 60, 70,000 subscribers. They've also been doing this for 5 years. The Angry Video Game Nerd did this 10 years ago. When there was nobody else doing it, it was a lot easier to get noticed. But now there's so many people, and it's hard to really, you know, pick your niche and just do it on your personality, especially when you're doing something that isn't highly searchable.
Yeah.
True. Yeah. Yeah, it's difficult, but at the same time, you do have to refocus on you. And I think that's, the most important lesson that I learned through the course of doing the show is starting out like, I'm going to be huge, I'm going to be the next Angry Video Game Nerd. And then, like, you know, year one goes by and I'm like, wow. Like, and you look back on your content and you're like, well, that sucked. And then you're like, well, wait, now how do I get better? And that's when you kind of, when you want to get better for you. And I think I totally agree with you, like Mike, like once you start focusing on yourself, the rest of it's just going to come.
Yeah.
And, you know, you can't worry about it.
I think it's important to remember that we all have real lives too, and a lot, some of these guys do this as their job and we don't. Mm-hmm. And you know, like with Classic Weekend Game Guy Ridiculousness, you know, I do have kids. I don't lock them in cages. They can open the cage, but in all seriousness, I have a family that I have to worry about, and I can't just drop and do a video whenever I want to. I normally, when I shoot videos, it's like at the middle of the night, and I'm lucky I can do a top 10 list or whatever, you know. And you know, it's a very difficult thing to orchestrate, and I'm not going to sacrifice my kids or whatever to do it. If I can work it out with a wife and we can figure out a way for me, fine, so be it. I mean, I've got something planned. I'm working on it as much as I can. It will work out a whole lot better once if and when we move into this house. I will be able to shoot what I've got going on. But that's, you know, that's going to have to wait until things are settled again. So, you know, I shoot what I can when I can at this point. I haven't done a video in 3 weeks or something like that. I just don't have time to shoot it right now.
You should do a Weekend Game Guy where it's on Super Star Wars or some kind of something from the Star Wars series where you actually do like the big bonfire with just your sweater on top of it and then the sweater comes back like the ghost of Star Wars at the end.
I think that could work, actually.
Yeah.
Just get some piano wire, just like piano wire and host.
I'm the biggest advocate of you going back to the sweater. I know it's a lot of time, Chris, and I know the payoff's not there, but I'm saying I loved your channel as soon as I saw it, like the first couple of Weekend Game Guy episodes I saw, and I was like, this is incredible. And like the first thing that came to my mind is, why isn't this bigger? This should be so much bigger. And then I met you and I realized, wow, this guy, he's such a jerk. I can see why it's not bigger.
No, but all kidding aside, though, like, I understand your frustration. You and Mike, more so than anybody, both your guys' channels are incredible, and you know, you deserve so much more attention. It's not fair, but I do understand people's mentality. There's just so many people out there, and mm-hmm. unless you're giving them what they want, or unless you've got, unfortunately, sometimes you've got to have the bigger guys on YouTube in your pocket that are willing to shout you out and push your channel. And unless you have that, sometimes you go unnoticed, and it's unfair.
Yeah, that is true. That's also something to really touch on, too, because I remember that the initial big-time videos that I was getting views on were all liked by the Game Chasers. So Billy would go and watch the video, and or I would send him a message and be like, hey, check out my video. And I really hated doing that because I didn't want to whore myself out and be like, hey, check this out. But I feel like there's no other way for you to get your stuff out there without kind of... That's the hardest part about being a YouTuber or a video content creator in any way, shape, or form, because you're starting from nothing and working your way from the bottom up. And so it's kind of like you want to try to... If you're doing it for the view count, like for the view count, just like you said, you're doing it for all the wrong reasons. If you're trying to make a career out of it, you're doing it for all the wrong reasons. It should be an extension of who you are, it should not control your financial situation. And I think a lot of that is really important to focus on when you're starting out. I think everybody should take that bit of advice and just kind of be like, all right, so this is not going to be I'm not going to be the next angry video game nerd. Like, that's not going to happen. And as soon as that snaps into your head and you realize it, I think you'll be a lot better off. But at the same time, like, I mean, you know, I only have 700-something subscribers. You have, like, 900-something. I'm not sure. What are you in, like, the 5,000-something, Mike?
Yeah, somewhere around there, I guess.
Yeah. So, like, I kind of feel like all the people underneath, I want to support them. So, like, I'll watch a random video and give it a like. Like, a buddy of mine, actually, who I went to high school with, his name's Paul, really nice guy. He just started his channel. He's doing Let's Plays. And I was like, you know what? I'm going to support him. You know, I'm going to like his videos or whatever. And even, like, the Dolly Popka, who asked me to be in one of his videos, same thing. Like, I'll help somebody out if they're, you know, they don't have a lot of views or they don't have a lot of, you know, subscribers, just to because I know how that felt. And I want to be able to give those people the chance that I was given by, like, the Game Chasers and, like, Retro Liberty, who have been, like, totally awesome dudes. Those guys are awesome.
They really are. No joke. Like, Aaron's awesome.
Both Aaron and Ricky are really cool guys. They're always up for, like, doing stuff. Like, I'll send him a message and be like, you know, or, like, he'll send me a message and be like, on Twitter, be like, I need you to do this, like, 13-second video. And I was like, sure, why not? And he just, I really feel like both of those channels are really helping with the community. And like, kind of like, you know, they're getting up there, especially with Grid Gaming starting off and everything. I think they're definitely going to be huge. I don't know if they'll be like Smosh huge, but they're going to be big. And I think they're kind of taking everybody with them because they care about the community so much. And that's really cool.
Well, you can even tell, like, the way this was developed, they went out and got guys like, I don't watch The Completionist, so please, anybody who listens to this, who's a fan of that, don't attack me. I'm subscribed to him, and I've watched some of the stuff. I think it's really good. I don't watch it regularly, but he took a guy from The Completionist, they took somebody from Living in 8-Bits, they took somebody from Retro Liberty, and they're making a gaming channel, and they really want it to be community-based. You can tell that, the way it was developed.
Yeah. No, it's really cool. I really like what they're doing with the Grid Gaming. And I think that the more people they bring along with them, I think it's just going to work out for the better, because you're going to have a channel that's more about the community and less about, you know, getting the subs and getting the views and getting, like, they don't really care about that. Like, that's going to come with the territory, and that's exactly what we're talking about. So, it shows.
Yes. So you ready to move on now?
Yeah. All right.
Good. Because sometimes, you know, sometimes we beat dead horses.
I've still got my backup about this.
You do?
No, not really. I'm done.
right.
You gotta be like, you know what?
I just can't. I still can't get over the lighting in that room.
I know,
like,
it's
incredible.
Isn't it great?
It's like I'm gonna install the sun in my room.
Like, I keep looking up at my little like clamp light here with a trash bag on it that I use as a diffuser here. And I'm going, man, I want Mike's room.
Right? For those who are listening who are kind of like, what are they talking about? I got a new house, a new office and everything, and the lighting is fantastic in this room. And so Chris and Mike are pretty jealous of my super cool lighting, which I didn't even realize was that good until we started going on this whole Skype journey.
For other content creators, if you want to call yourself that, I call us video makers or YouTubers, whatever, and you've gone through the pain of not having enough light and having to try to put lights up and try to get things right. It's so clear, I can see through his soul.
Words don't do this justice, guys.
No.
I screen capped it. Well, let's talk about a thing that I was talking to you, Game Genie. That way there's no confusion. The YouTube is dropping some subscribers from channels, apparently. I got it off one of the YouTube blogs that they release stuff. So apparently tomorrow, actually, they're going, I think it's tomorrow, 16th, right? Tomorrow, they're going to drop a bunch of channels that are like suspended and things like that. So we may lose some subscribers tomorrow. Thoughts?
So does that include inactive channels too?
I don't know. I don't know how. I didn't read the nuts and bolts of it. I just know that from what I gather, it's just channels that people have basically suspended, that have been suspended maybe due to possibly content ID. Maybe, I don't know. But basically, you're going to be losing subscribers that chances are never watch anyway and wouldn't watch because they really don't even exist anymore. So I guess the question out there right now is anybody upset about that? And if so, why, if they don't even really exist at all?
I don't know. Like, people use that subscriber number as, like, a value on how they're doing, I guess, on YouTube. Like, I'll tell you, Chris, like, obviously I'll send you a message every now and then saying, oh, wow, I'm about to hit another subscriber milestone or something along those lines. But at the end of the day, if I lose 400 subscribers tomorrow or 500 or whatever percentage and they're not watching anyways, to me that's not really a huge deal. Like, I don't care.
Yeah.
What it leaves me wondering is, why is YouTube going to the trouble of doing that?
Yeah,
I'm also wondering that. And I'm also kind of wondering if it has something to do with the whole YouTube Google conglomerate too, because I mean, at the end of the day, just like you said, I'd rather have the people who are actually watching the show as subscribers and who are actually contributing to, you know, the channel in any way, shape, or form, commenting, liking, subscribing, whatever. If the dialogue's there, that's what I care about the most, not necessarily the popularity. So I'd rather just talk with guys like you about video games than worry about how many subs I have. So the drop, I'm not really worried about. Because I know that the true people that are there, that have been there, they're the ones that are going to stay there and are going to continue watching and commenting and liking and all that stuff. And that's what matters.
Yeah, okay. Because at first, when I first read about it and heard about it, I thought, what the heck? I was a little upset at first. But then I thought, well, I've got like 900 subscribers, and I really, on a good day, might get 100 views on a video, you know? And I go, if I lose a couple, they're probably people that haven't even been in my channel since forever.
True.
You know, so who cares?
Yeah.
You know?
But why? Yeah, why would they go through the trouble of doing this?
I don't know. I don't know what the argument is for the why right now, but I'm sure it's, I smell Google Plus.
Hold on. Yeah. Let me get my buddy Jesse Ventura over here. We're going to talk about this a little bit. So, Mr. Jesse Ventura, conspiracy theorist, does anybody think that maybe YouTube's trying to clean up everybody's subscribers because they're moving to more of a tiered system and they want to have actual real numbers, and they think that maybe they're going to try to push some of the smaller guys out? Jesse thinks so.
Yeah, I think he might be right. I didn't think about that, but he might be right. You know, yeah. I mean, it would. I thought this was going to happen whenever they started merging the Google Plus and the subscriber counts together. I thought for sure that small guys that less than 100, less than 200, less than 500, whatever, we would start seeing those channels drop off. And I got a funny feeling that we'll start seeing that drop off. Well, I mean, this, once again, conspiracy theory here. We might see things drop off at different levels. Like 100 levels, they're going to go be gone. 200, oh, well, they'll disappear. And then before you know it, it'll be 10,000 subs and up will be all that's left. And then who knows where they would go from that. It's like they're trying to become a network. That's the reason people watch this is because it's not a network. You know, they don't want to watch.
Yeah.
YouTube is supposed to be a place where you make videos. And here's the thing that I've been trying to focus on the whole time. You make videos for you. Not for anybody else. You make them for
you. That's why they call it YouTube.
That's right.
Right?
this is supposed to be your platform to speak out in any way you want. But, like, Chris, you did the YouTube content creator course. And, Mike, did you do it too?
No. I signed up for the whole, like, YouTube content creator, like, thing where you can, like, try to get money. And I made $12, but I didn't get to see any of it. Because I didn't hit the level of $100 or more in my ad plus or whatever.
Yeah.
Or AdSense. So I didn't make anything. And I was just kind of like, all right. So that's when I was like unmonetized. Because I'm not going to help Google get money from ads if they're not going to pay me what I'm helping them get.
Yeah.
And so I was really, that left a really sour taste in my mouth. And I was kind of like, I'm not going to contribute to something where they're not. It's not. It should be a two-way street. Like if my view count is in the low, whatever, and you're saying I earned 12 cents, give me that 12 cents. Yeah. I earned it.
It's my money. I earned it.
Yeah, like give me that 12 cents. I just think it's fair because I'm helping you with ads, so you shouldn't put a limit on monetization.
Yeah, but the.
But that's a whole other topic altogether.
The content creator course really forced people to do, like, the commercial. You do your one-minute commercial that you put up in your video tab. They're trying to make everything really uniform and trying to say, we want your channel to be this. And basically, by saying that, they're also saying, if your channel's not like this, we don't want it.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
That's how I took it. Maybe I'm just too nuts. I don't know.
Yeah.
No, that's a good point. I never even looked at it like that. I mean, I've seen channels with trailers, and I always just thought it was more like, hey, you know, this is what my channel's all about. And I even contemplated doing one, and I did do one for Pixel Toons Radio, honestly, because I was like, well, people really see, they have no idea, like, they see these, like, hour-long videos go up on my channel, and they're like, I ain't watching that, next, you know what I mean? And so finally I was like, I was talking to my buddy Ed, and I was like, how are people going to actually watch the episodes, how are people going to get linked with this product? And that's when I was like, let's make a commercial. Or actually, he approached me about making a commercial. So we did it. We put it out 6 minutes and it got like 23 views. And I'm like, all right, well, whatever. We tried. You know what I mean? Like, it is what it is. But as far as like trailers and all that, like I'd rather Google or YouTube or whoever fix what's wrong with the whole, I have four profiles. Why do I have four profiles? Why is it that none of them link to the same page?
Right.
Why is it that I click, you know what I mean? Like, why is it that when I click this, it links to three other pages that are all just Google Plus, and none of them have my subscribers. One of them has zero subscribers. Like,
the
whoever came up with that, like, they just need to be fired.
The channel we post this on, the NL Gamer Podcast channel that all the old podcasts are on, yeah. When you bring it up, when you log in, there are actually four accounts that come up. And I have to make sure I pick the right one. I changed all their profile pictures so I have one that I would know which one the right one was. Because they all just said the same thing for a long time. Mm-hmm. And it was I thought all of our podcast episodes got deleted at one point because I was like, where the hell did everything go?
That's what I said. I sign on one day and I'm like, oh, what's this? Whatever, let me just click this. I don't know what this is. And then like the next day I sign in and I have zero views and I have zero videos. And I think the only thing that I had on this Google Plus page was actually like a Michael B. the Game Genie video. And I'm like, It was like a liked or a favorite or something like that, and I was like, wait, I didn't sign into that. Like, what's going on? So, I don't know.
Yeah, it's bad.
It's a nightmare. It's bad. Yeah.
And you really can, there's no way.
They need to fix
and
that.
And how do you delete them? You can't delete those extra ones.
You can't. That's what I'm saying. Like, they need to fix that. They need to stop what they're doing with all this ridiculousness of, we're going to drop channels and we're going to drop subscriptions and we're going to do this. And now they've changed YouTube again so that now those drop-down things up at the top right don't even matter anymore. Like, they just changed the channel. Now if I want to click my subscriptions, I got to go to the left. So the whole thing has kind of changed recently, and, like, sometimes it'll go away. Sometimes it'll be there. Like, I don't know. It's a mess.
Yeah. Fix your shit, Google. Sorry.
No, I don't, but here's the thing, guys, and, like, again, this might be me being nuts, being the conspiracy guy. I think they do have a fix, and their fix is going to be, let's clear out the channels we don't think fit.
Yeah, but does that mean that they're going to clear out the channels like the Google Plus channels that that are empty? That have, like, that's what I'm kind of wondering, if they're going to do that.
Yeah, they're going to clean out the Google Plus channels that are empty. How they're going to do it is, they're going to clear out everything that's not popular eventually, in my opinion.
Like, my channel is gone. You know what I'm saying? Like,
yeah, I'm right behind you. Actually, I'm in the foreground. You're in the background. I'm in the foreground.
Who knows?
Yeah.
On that one.
Like, someone mentioned this to me one time, and it goes back to when they cut out video responses, which, like, it was one of the things that I think really killed the community from YouTube. Like, people still say the community, but how, I don't understand how you can have a community where we can't connect through the video responses anymore. And I know you can, you know, link in the Google Plus comments down below, but that's not the same thing. I mean, a lot of people relied. That was a big thing for smaller channels, was that you could attach your video or you could do a video response. And when they took that away, it just killed a lot of what we were doing. Like, that was one of my favorite things to do when I started YouTube, was do video responses. But then for people who say to me now, you're not as big a part of the community, I can't do a video response. How am I supposed to be a community person without a video response? Maybe I just need to comment. I don't know.
Yeah.
I mean, I kind of hear you on that. Like, I was doing the same thing. I was commenting left and right with video comments on all different things. I would even take some of my reviews and, like, I attached my Journey to Celius review onto Happy Video Game Nerds because I was like, hey, dude, you should check this out. Like, I made this. Like, you know, I tried to not make it at all like your review, but I want you to see this because I think you'd enjoy it. And you can't do that anymore, which really sucks. You also, like, I would hold contests and stuff on my channel, and I would get video comments and video, you know, like, video commentary, and it was really cool to, like, see what other people had. Like, I did, like, a top 5 NES video or something like that, and people would be like, here's my collection. And I'm like, that's really cool. Like, that's awesome. And I kind of feel like when they took videos away, they kind of took the face of the commenters away. And that's what kind of bugs me, because you want to see them, and you want to see what they're like, and you want to interact with them on that level, and you can't because it's gone.
Yeah.
So I agree with you. That sucks.
Yeah, something I'm not allowed to talk about, but I'm going to talk about is something that really irritated me was when they took away the video responses. One of my favorite YouTube personalities, Pushing Up Roses, got on there and said, great, this is great, because now all those channels that don't have any idea how to make videos can't post worthless reviews and worthless video responses on people's videos now that make good videos.
She said that?
Oh, yeah.
Wow.
Yeah.
That's ridiculous.
Yeah.
Yeah, I don't know.
Maybe I took her out of context, because it's hard to, when someone writes something, it's hard to tell what their mannerisms are from doing it. But, I mean, I immediately just saw the worst in it, and I was like, I'm done with her.
Yeah, <That's it. laughs> I kind of, you know, I really like, as I said before, I really love the Happy Video Game Nerd's content. I think he really knows how to put a review together. But when I watched his Earthbound review, I kind of got a little insulted, because I'm not an Earthbound fan. Like, and for him to be like, if you don't like this guy, he either said, if you don't like this game, you should be ashamed of yourself, or if you don't know about this game, you should be ashamed of yourself. And you know what? Honestly, some people just don't know about it, or some people just aren't interested. Like, I could really care less about Earthbound. Doesn't mean that I'm saying it's a good game or a bad game. I'm just saying I personally am not interested or invested in this. And I kind of took it as an offense. Like, that'd be like if I made a video and I was like, anybody who hasn't heard of Astynix is a jerk. You know, like, who does that? I don't know. Like, it's just, you can't generalize your audience. You have to clue your audience in and be like, this is what this is. This is why I'm sharing it with you. And that I think a lot of reviewers kind of lose that. And I think that goes back to what we were talking about before about content creators or wannabe content creators afraid of making content because of these up-and-comers or these huge people that are just like, oh my god, like, I'm practically a YouTube god, you know? And I don't know. I just...
It's...
The whole... It can make you... It can make you very cynical if you really stop to think about it, you know?
It's funny that you kind of mentioned that because... And we've talked about Matt already and his LJN Defender stuff. I mean...
Yeah.
He's a good example of that, of people like... I've seen some pretty harsh comments in his stuff.
Yeah, I know.
But in my opinion, and I've told Mike, other Mike, several times that I feel like a lot of people hate on LJN just because of the Angry Video Game Nerd series. And he himself has said, not every LJN, like James Rolfe, has said, not every LJN game is crap. Yes, there are a lot of crappy games. But you guys, I'm not the end-all be-all, the oracle of video games here. I just express an opinion, and it's a character, you know. But, you know, I've seen Matt catch crap and like, you're just riding AVGN's... No, he's not. He is making you look at it a little different. And I don't... I mean...
Yeah. I really appreciate that about
it. I love it, because I actually like a lot of... I love Back to the Future.
Me too.
I love, you know... there's a lot of those games that people shit on, honestly, that I really genuinely enjoy. So...
I just told him about Friday the 13th. I posted in the comments. I was like, I think this is one of your best episodes,
it was
honestly.
Fantastic.
And... It was great, and honestly, when you watch the LJN Defender, I think part of the reason why he is getting a lot of hate is exactly like you said. I think he's going from, you know, because Screw Attack obviously loves him, because he mentions James a lot in his videos, and rightfully so. I think it's more him saying, this is how he feels about, this is how James feels about this, this is how I feel about this. And he really tries very hard to make that stark contrast of differences. And I think it really works well in his reviews. So, I mean, I was watching him when he was just doing Cygnus Destroyer reviews. And I was looking at his channel and I was like, you know what, I'm gonna help support him as best I can. Because he's doing some really high quality work. And his work is getting better and better and better. And when he did LJN Defender, I think he blew up. And a lot of people saw that. And they were like, that's why they were like... Oh, well, you're just kind of riding on his coattails. But honestly, like you said, people have trouble with separating James from AVGN. You know what I mean? Like, some people think that James is AVGN all the time. And that's absolutely not the case. If you ever meet him in real life, he is the nicest guy. And he's not at all anything like that. It's a character. It's a person that he's playing. And I honestly feel bad for him because you'll get these people in these, like, have either of you been to any of his panels? Yeah, his panels. Yeah. Like, he gets some questions and I'm like, oh my god. Like, this one guy was like, who do you hate the most? And he like starts listing YouTubers. I was like, that must be so terrible to get. Like, I don't know, like, because honestly, you're not going to sit there and be like, well, you know, I hate, what's his name, Chris Boers, from...
The Irate Gamer, yeah.
The Irate Gamer. Like, you're not going to do that. Like, you have more self-respect for yourself. And James is not at all, like, a high as mighty guy. He's a very humble guy, very nice guy, and it's just so... I feel really bad for him because he gets people like that. And anytime you have, like, a channel or really just anything, music, movies, you know, actors, actresses get it all the time. You've got something where you've got something huge and big. And you've got somebody who obviously either has severe, like, issues. Like, you know, I've heard some horror stories.
It's not severe issues. There are people out there that can't separate what they see on TV from reality.
Exactly.
There's people out there that think wrestling is real, that will try to get in a physical confrontation with you because they really do believe in John Cena's lifestyle, and they think they are John Cena. And this happened to me. I went to WrestleMania 27, and a guy tried to accost me in the lineup because I wasn't wearing a John Cena shirt. I mean, some people are just nuts.
I think you're going to get that, though. I think you're honestly going to get that. I mean, in any venue, in any way, shape, or form. And, you know, it's nothing against those people as people. I just think some people need to separate reality from fiction. And I think a lot of that does not happen in any, you know, especially on YouTube, because you're only seeing one side of people in most cases.
Mike, do you remember what a culture shock it was the first time I was on the podcast, how my weekend game got like very Mr. Rogers video, you know, kind of personality. Yeah. And then me in real life, I got a little bit of a potty mouth. I got a really perverted sense of humor. I'm real sarcastic, things like that. And then I got on there and Mike was just like, he laughed the whole time because I think more out of shock than enjoyment.
Yeah, it's actually... It was hard to believe because Chris was so dirty. Like, that's where we came up with the idea. That was where we came up with the idea for Weekend Game
after
Guy
dark,
After Dark.
Yeah, that's, that's not even because that bad. That's not even...
No. But that's what we talked about, like, because we got off the podcast, and I was like, man, Chris, like, you're a little... You got a dark side to you. You need to do something, like, a little more seductive.
Zipper mask.
It's like Baywatch... Like Baywatch Nights. But yeah, that's like exactly... Weekend Game Guy Nights.
Awesome. Weekend Game Guy After Dark.
Yeah.
But the other idea for the name of the show was Weekend Game Guy Red Shoe Nights. Yeah. Didn't work.
50 Shades of Weekend Game Guy.
There you go.
Yeah. Anyways, conspiracies aside, it just doesn't make any sense to me why they would go through the trouble of taking all these inactive or suspended subscribers away when they're not, like you said, Mike, and like you said, Chris, actually dealing with the issues that are out there. I really don't understand why they're working on this right now.
Especially when they have such more important things to work on.
Glaring issues, yeah.
Yeah.
Well, tomorrow we'll hold the truth, won't it? We'll see what happens. I may or may not be on here tomorrow. We'll see what happens.
Well, I think that's a long time coming. Like, a lot of that's going to tie in, I guess, to net neutrality and the way things are going to work. Because you guys, I'm not 100% on how net neutrality works yet. But what I understand from it is that the websites themselves will have to, not us as individuals, we won't have to pay for subscriptions. But the websites themselves will have to pay the providers in order to be seen.
Yeah.
So at that point, what's going to happen is YouTube, which has such a massive reach, basically they're going to lose some of that reach unless they're willing to fork out more money to like providers like Comcast and stuff like
that.
That's what I understood.
Which would in turn, I mean, business sense would say they're going to need that money from somewhere. Our pockets will be the ones they dip into.
Yeah, so I think we're going to have to pay to have channels, and then we're also going to have to pay to watch other channels. That's an option. But my mindset on that is, if they have to pay, they might try to reduce what their level of capacity is in order to get it out to more people.
Yeah, true.
That's my mindset.
I kind of viewed it as all the rich people are going to be able to produce content and be able to do all this stuff. So you'll have channels like Smosh and PewDiePie or whatever, and the Weekend Game Guys and Mike Tendo channels, you know, dude, you haven't played this game, and the Mike B, the Game Genies even, will just be flattened by stuff like this. And you may have, like, the Game Chasers and, you know, Pat the NES Punk and all those type of channels still around, but they'll be at our level. So it'll be, like, a huge drop because they need to now pay YouTube to pay Comcast and Verizon and all these other major corporations. I mean, the whole thing is just ridiculous. I mean, I think we're all pretty much in unison that net neutrality should be, I mean, it should be neutral. It should be an information superhighway is exactly that. You shouldn't have to be able to pay more when you get onto the highway to be able to go to a better level. You know what I mean?
But, like, how can this argument not made that the internet is a resource for education? So, of course, there's other things like us on it, but shouldn't there be, like, some kind of freedom for education? Of course, I live in Canada, where almost everything's free. I know you guys live in the States. It's very different, but...
Oh, so true. Yeah, no, I hear you on that one. I think that it's... I think part of the reason is because of the mentality that we're in now, where the government is kind of trying to lift everyone up.
Yeah.
And the problem is that when they do that, the rich get richer, the poor get poorer. And it's tough, because I don't want to talk about politics. But at the same time, like, this is something that should be a utility.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? This is absolutely something that, like, the internet should be a utility. It should be like water. It should be like heat, hot water, that sort of thing. Everybody should have access to it. And it is a learning tool. You're absolutely right. And even though it can be used for entertainment purposes... Our shows, as much as they're entertainment and our channels, they're also educational. Because I'll get comments from people that'll be like, dude, I really haven't played that game. And now I bought it. Like, I can't even remember. CWR2. His name's Chris.
Chris Roberts.
Yeah. Chris Roberts, yeah.
Yeah.
So he sent me a message or posted something on my Twitter and was like, dude, I finally picked up Midnight Resistance. After watching your review, and I'm like, that's awesome. Like, I helped somebody. That was the whole reason why I did it. It's the same reason why when I was working at a game store, how I would see that little twinkle in the kid's eye when I'm, like, handing them this game, and they're, like, getting all excited. Like, that's kind of what I do this for. And that's, I think, why a lot of people do it, is to share that overall knowledge.
And the experience. And the experience.
Yeah.
I really don't have any knowledge. I just like pissing people off when I say Mario.
Mario.
You bastard!
Margie. Luigi.
98% of my comments are like, it's Mario, not Mario.
You can't help it, you're Canadian. Right? That's why you say it, right?
We're merry all the time. Yeah,
that's what I hear. Especially in your strange time zone.
Yeah, we have our own time zone for our island.
What time is it there?
Geez, right now it's 12:21.
Yeah.
Oh, that's crazy.
He's an hour and a half ahead. It's the strange. It took so long to get used to that when it was, because for a long time it was just him and Keeb, and then I came on, and then they were like, "All right, we're going to do it at 11:30." Well, Keeb would tell me, "All right, we're going to get started around, I don't know, 11:30 or whatever," and I'd be like, "Okay." Oh, crap, you're in a different time zone. So I'd go have to look it up on the internet to make sure I was the right amount of time. It was very confusing, but
That's not how Chad did it. Chad would call you, and he's like, we're podcasting right now. Right. And then 7 minutes into the podcast, he'd be like, oh, OK Chief is calling in. He's on it now, too.
Oh, gosh.
Get used to our timeline. It's the island of love.
Oh, man. You want to do some music? Let's talk about some music for a couple seconds, or...
Cool. All right. Well, more than a couple seconds.
I mean, relatively speaking.
One, two,
we're done. All right, now we're going to move on. No, I don't really know what about music you guys want to talk about, but I'm game for about anything.
Well, I know that Mike's very passionate about video game music. I mean, Pixel Tomb Radio, and Mike, I follow your channel on Facebook, too, and you're always posting, like, video game music and stuff like that, so it's something that you're passionate about. So I guess we just wanted to talk about, you know, what is it specifically about video game music that really sticks out to you, and are there a couple games that really stick out in your mind as having some of the best and most influential video game music?
Sure. Yeah, no, I mean, I'm such a huge fan of video game music. Always have been. I think, as I said in my episode of Pixel Tunes Radio, where we did Mike's picks, which is where we did all my picks. I picked 10 songs or 11 songs or whatever. And I talked about each and every one of them. And one of the things I mentioned was video game music kind of helped me get into real music in a way. And my co-host Ed was like, well, yeah, it's because it's an experience that you're sharing with yourself and no one else. Like, this is your own personal experience. Nobody else is having that experience. And I think with video games in general, that's kind of the same way. I mean, you're playing a video game, and the way that I play it is different than the way that, you know, Chris, you'll play it, and Mike, the way that you'll play it. So it's kind of the same thing with music. I'll hear different things. Like, I'll listen to Sparkman's theme from Mega Man 3, and I'll hear things in that song that I've never heard before. And then I'll play it for you, and you'll be like, oh yeah, I hear that. And I'll be like, all right, well, listen to this part. And I'll kind of like point it out. So I would say as far as music goes, there's a lot of soundtracks that don't get recognized that should. One for me is Mr. Gimmick, which has one of the best unheard video game soundtracks of all time. Fantastic stuff. There's also a PC 98 game called Rusty, which is a Castlevania clone. We just featured it on episode 10 on Ed's Picks, and it's got some fantastic music, really good stuff. What's interesting is my co-host Ed has gotten me into a bunch of video game music that I'd never heard before. So it's, instead of, dude, you haven't played this game, it's, dude, you haven't heard the song. And that's kind of the way that it's been going. So Mr. Gimmick is definitely one that I think people should really give a second chance to. There's so many good tracks on it, and because of the added sound chip in it, it really enhances, because it's a Famicom cart, so it really enhances the whole sound and everything that you're listening to. I'm trying to think of any other really good video game music soundtracks that are not super, super popular that, like, people should check out.
Have you ever heard of a game called Streets of Rage?
Right? Streets of Rage 2 is probably my favorite, but no? 3? For you? 1? Yeah, one is really good. I would probably say I like 1 and 2 more than 3. 3 is a little weird for me. I don't know. But yeah. 2 is my favorite.
It's amazing how many people jumped down my throat about Streets of Rage 2. They're like, Streets of Rage 2 was the best Streets of Rage game ever made. I'm still stuck on 1. Like, I find Streets of Rage 2 is just too easy. Mm-hmm. That's my biggest problem with it. I there's no challenge at all to me. Like, you can blow right through it. I don't enjoy that. Streets of Rage 1, I still have never beaten because of those two stupid women at the end.
There's definitely a way to do it. I'm pretty sure you have to, like you got to do the backwards hit. I think that's how you got to do it. It's really difficult.
You got to catch them mid-jump.
Yeah.
Like, you catch them from behind and you can go into the combos, yeah. But that's off topic.
Yeah. What about you? What soundtracks do you guys kind of like that you would kind of share and be like, yo, you should listen to this?
I know, Chris, you're a big Castlevania guy. Like,
you pick any of the Castlevania games, any of them, and it's just, I mean, you got Bloody Tears, you know, I mean.
Whoa. Not Lords of Shadow.
Okay. The real. Agreed. Okay, let's talk about the real. Let's do the real Castlevania
Thank
games.
Thank you.
You know,
Thank
like,
you.
And even the Haunted Castle, the arcade one, the versions of songs on that are really cool because of the, you know, arcade audio is so much better. But I love just the whole. I mean, meeting Kanuyo Yamashita. Wow, what a mouthful! But when I met her, that was, I seriously was like on the verge of like weeping. And I don't know. It was really a cool experience, and now I've got, you know, that box copy of Castlevania and signed by her, and that was a big deal to me. I mean, you know, because
that's cool.
It was really cool. Gosh, what else? Weird one that I like, and you know, people might not dig it. And there's not a whole lot of music in the whole game, but like, there's just like the title screen music and stuff like that. For Captain Skyhawk, I really love the title screen and the continue screen music. I love it. Shut up, Mike. I love it. And Battletoads. Battletoads soundtrack's pretty cool. The Paul's music, I could listen to that for pretty much ever. Yeah. There's some cool stuff like that that, like, it's like you said, that, you know, most people don't really listen to, but, like the Paul's music, me and my brother would turn that on and, like, pause the game intentionally so we could listen to that for a while when we were kids. It's weird.
Yeah. Yeah, that's a lot of the stuff that we talk about on the podcast. Is we kind of went from a podcast that was very like information driven, and we were like, this is the composer, this is what they do, and these are the games they worked on. And we kind of have gotten to a level where we're comfortable talking to each other about the soundtracks and like what our experiences were with them. So on the show, it's really a lot of fun to put together because we get to share those experiences with other people, and then we get comments back about, you know, oh, well, you know, this is how I felt, this is how, you know, how I interacted with that soundtrack and stuff. So, I mean, the audience base is, of course, growing because it's tough to listen to a podcast for an hour unless you're really kind of motivated by the people that are in the podcast. So, yeah, it can be difficult, but at the same time, like, it's helped me learn all about, like, a ton of different video game music. Like, that game Rusty that I told you about. I would have never found out about that if it wasn't for my co-host, Ed, being like, oh, I got this game, you should listen to the music, here's the soundtrack. And I put it in, and what's really funny is he gave me a copy of the soundtrack that the speed was twice the speed accidentally, because when he like, is a genius with getting all the soundtracks off of games and stuff like that. So when he got the soundtrack, it wasn't the right speed. So I'm listening to the soundtrack, and I'm like, this is awesome. Like, this is super cool and super fast, and it's like speed metal type stuff. It's really good. And he was like, oh, I screwed up, dude. I forgot to tell you. Like, the soundtrack's like twice the speed. Here, play the game. And I played the game, and I was like, oh, well, the music's still good. But don't give me the correct version. I want to rock out to this twice the speed version of the game.
I'd have to say, like, a buddy of mine, Will Ganondorf 56, he's like, he writes like all the music for almost all my videos, with the exception of a handful that I get from other sources. But he he and I both have agreed that when we played Sonic Adventure for the first time on the Dreamcast, we both said, you know what, video game music, you could actually just listen to this stuff, like, you and then from that game I started going back and listening to other. And forward, as I went forward, I started really listening and trying to pay attention to what was going on, and really realizing, wow, there's a lot more going on here. You know, I mean, yeah. I could listen to anything by Zentata. I don't care. Anything Zentata does, you know, from the Ninja Warrior soundtrack, Raystorm, any of that stuff, I mean, it just gets me moist. And I love that. I love them. They're awesome.
So you see where the Weekend Game Guy After Dark came from, right?
Moist.
Yeah, but it's funny you bring up Sonic Adventure. Like, one song that always sticks out to me is the first stage song from Sonic Adventure 2, Escape from the City. Yeah. That song is amazing. Yeah.
That's a great song. I actually that was one of my picks on our we had an episode that we did that was no chiptunes. So it was all just like gaming music, and that was one of the songs that I picked. I was like, "Yeah, I'm going to throw this in. It's got great vocals, great tempo." Good stuff. There's a game for the Famicom that you guys should check out. If you like you mentioned Ninja Warriors, this is kind of what reminded me. Like the Mighty Morphin Power Rangers game has really good music. Shadow of the Ninja, like those types of games. There's a game that came out called Shoujin Sentai Jetman. It is a Famicom game, and I'm going to do a review on it eventually. The game itself is kind of simplistic, but it's basically a Power Rangers game, but not Mighty Morphin Power Rangers. It's the Super Sentai, you know, series in Japan. And so they came out with this game, and I believe it's Hiroki Iwatsuki did the music for it. And it is fantastic. I mean, every song, if you like Shatterhand soundtrack, every song is Shatterhand.
Awesome.
It is really good stuff. So Shoujin Sentai Jetman is definitely it's definitely worth checking out if you like video game music. It's all really fast, awesome, up-tempo stuff. Really awesome. So check that out. Yeah.
Yeah. Did you know, Mike, other Mike, I don't know which Mike, either Mike, original Super Mario Brothers, okay, so the soundtrack there, obviously, that's probably some of the most iconic music in existence. I mean, I don't know anybody that doesn't know at least the first level. But which level? I can't remember what level it is, but as you collect the coins in that level, it's with the music.
So this is like the Pink Floyd Dark Side of the Wizard of Oz sort of thing?
Yeah, like as you run through and pick up the coins, it goes with the music. And it was done that way intentionally so that I had to find it. I'll find it and hook you guys up. But it's a really crazy, like, crafty.
Is it a Mario World song? Like, is it Mario World? Because there's a bunch of videos where people level edit Mario levels.
It's actually,
and they put music to it and it goes with the music, like, I've seen that.
No, this
stuff
is actually from the original NES Super Mario Brothers. I think it's like level
okay.
One of the mushroom levels where, you know, you've got to jump from the mushroom to, you know what I'm talking about? One of those big, like, in the sky levels. That's what I always called it when I was a kid. but the coin collecting goes with the music. And I learned about it on watching some of those speedruns for charity I watched over, like, Christmas break or whatever. And this crazy guy that could, like, he knew how, like, the frame rate would change the level. Like, it, like, links back to how they randomize the flying fish that jump up. And just crazy. Like, he knew all these, like, weird hacks and, like, if I did it just the right time, weird stuff. But anyway, he knew that. And then I immediately started going, trying to make it do it. So it's really cool stuff. I have to find that. But I'll show you guys. It's really cool.
That's pretty neat.
Yeah.
Yes.
Indeed. 11 o'clock. Let's see. You guys want to do some games we've been playing for a second? How about that?
Yeah, sure.
All right, so who wants to go first? Not me.
I think the guest goes
first. Let's do the guest first.
Force the guest to go first.
All right.
Is that fair? Like, do you feel comfortable doing that, Mike?
Yeah, no. Honestly, I haven't been playing much, and I'll explain why. So I just bought a house, and it's been nonstop working on the house, and none of the game stuff really is set up except for my Wii U and my 3DS. So, yeah, I can't tell you I think the last time I played an NES was when I got a reproduction cart from my buddy Paul, that was Mr. Gimmick, and I was like, I just want to try this out, and because he like hacked the cart so that you would hear like the sound channels that were like missing from the Scandinavian version or whatever, like crazy stuff that he did with it, like the dude's a genius. So I pop in the cart and we test it out, and that was, I think, the last NES game that I seriously sat down and played.
Wow.
But otherwise, I've been playing Mario Kart 8, which is awesome. I've been playing Tomodachi Life on the 3DS, which is really fun. And I don't know, like, it's fun, but then only in small spurts. So I'll play it for a little bit. It's more just like a, hey, what are my friends doing? You know, it's like a virtual, like, me sort of like hotel thing. So everybody's living in an apartment and you just go and visit all your friends that you've made into me's, and you're just like, you know, hey, what's this doing? Like, what are they doing? And it's just weird. So it's just a very weird, wacky, I guess you can call it a game. What else have I been playing? I bought Abe and Hawking's and the 1001 Spikes on the Wii U, like the virtual console. You guys need to check out that game. It's really, really good. If you like Castlevania, like, I'm a huge Castlevania fan as well. So if you like Castlevania, there's tons of nods to Castlevania, Ghosts and Goblins.
Nice.
The MSX Metal Gear games, as far as like the sound, they sound like right out of, the music sounds right out of the MSX Metal Gear games. It's really good stuff. And the game is essentially you have 1001 lives, and you have to go through the game with, and there's different modes and stuff that you could play through as well, like arcade mode. And the story mode is basically you get 1001 lives, and if you lose them all, that's it, game's over, and you have to start all the way at the beginning. And it's a platformer. It's a really hard, like Super Meat Boy hard platformer, because it's a puzzle platformer. So you have to move this switch and then jump on this thing, and then if you don't do it the right way, you die. You have to start all over. It's a lot of fun.
Cool.
Yeah. But that's what I've been playing.
Cool.
Got to get that game room set up. I'm so close. I'm done with painting. Well, we got one more layer of paint for the game room, and then the other side of the game room has to be basically finished, and then I'm done. And then I can lift up everything. I'm going to post pictures and videos and stuff on my channel of like what I did and like how hard we've been working on this stuff. I mean, yeah, I'm like super excited to like unpack all my games, because all my games have been like lonely in the boxes, like in the basement. Just like, I'll go into like the laundry room to go, you know, put laundry in, and I'll just be like, I can hear them scratching at the boxes. Let me out! I want to be played.
That's creepy.
Yeah.
Same thing happened to a neighbor kid, and
it'd
be funny if I was joking. Mr. Burry, what did you been playing?
Mike, I didn't have a full move, but I just basically redid my game room recently too. In honor of Keeb, I put up a video, but of course I left the 7-minute phone call out of it, Chris, so sorry about that.
I'm not watching it.
But
not watching.
Yeah, so anyways, after I was done, that's what I did too. I did a quick tour of the room and showed everybody the very minute amount of space I have here, but how I'm trying to maximize that to the most of my capacity. So that took a lot of time, but now I'm done. I've been able to play some games again. I've gone back, and I'm actually trying to finally finish the original Metroid Prime on the, well, Wii. I'm playing it through Metroid Prime Trilogy, but it's the GameCube version. I've never been able to beat that game. I find it, for some reason, really challenging, so I'm playing through it again now, and I'm right at the point where I got stuck last time where I turned it away, so hopefully I can pull through and finish that. It's right after you get the second suit, so okay. That's where I'm to, yeah. And okay. I've missed a couple of energy tanks I gotta try and go back and get, so.
Have you played Prime 2?
I only probably played Echoes for about maybe 35 minutes. See, the thing is, I bought all these games, then I bought Metroid Prime Trilogy, and mm-hmm. I've never played either the third game, Corruption, I think the third one's called, on the Wii, or Echoes, because I want to finish Metroid Prime first, so I've got a whole trilogy to play through.
Nice.
I did finish Metroid Zero Mission on the Game Boy Advance, I think it is, so I finally got a copy of that, went back and played that. That's such a good experience. Yeah. I think I've never played through the original Metroid game. Mike, after your review, you've inspired me, but I haven't had a chance to go back yet. But I think that's what Metroid Prime Zero is, if I'm not mistaken. It's a retelling of the first game with some added stuff in there.
Yeah, I mean, Metroid Zero Mission is basically the first game, but I guess you could call it, I don't know, like a reboot? I guess would be the best way to do it. It's like a remake or a reboot. It keeps the spirit of the original game, but the confusion of the maps and, you know, the whole where do I go aspect is, it's still a very non-linear game, but it, I mean, it's not like Metroid Fusion, which is pretty much linear, but it's a good experience. I agree with you there. And I think it's a great rendition or it's a great way for developers to look at games and be like, I want to remake my game. Like let's say they wanted to remake, I don't know, like Jack and Dexter or whatever, you know what I mean? Like that type of thing. That's a great way to be like, here's an example of a game that is iconic and has come out and is fantastic. How do we make it better? And how do we make it more playable? And I wish a lot of other developers would go back and do that.
I think everybody has the same complaint with that game that I'm going to make right now. I finished it in one sitting. Yeah, I mean, it's very quick to play through. I think the whole experience, maybe 4 hours, and that's if you get lost.
Yeah.
Especially for a Metroid title, that is like...
Really
short.
Yeah.
What else have I been playing? I've also been playing Wolfenstein The New Order on the Xbox One.
How is that?
Finally got it to work?
Finally, my wife bought it for me on Thursday, and it has massive installation issues.
Oh, wow.
Installation issues. So after 3 full days of trying to get it installed, I called Microsoft support, and I'm going to tell you, I must have got lucky because I got this wonderful woman who actually figured out the problem. Then she even went a step above after she got my actual Wolfenstein installation to work. She also told me why my HDMI switcher wasn't processing audio. Like, it was amazing. Like, the woman actually said to me at the end, she said, do you have any more issues? And I was like, not unless you can tell me why my HDMI switcher has stopped processing audio. And she was like, you know what? Actually, I can. Wow. It was incredible. But anyways, Wolfenstein The New Order, I really like it. It's really cool. It's really interesting. But I do have a slight problem with it. You've got to pick up everything. You've got to go around. Every time there's an item on the ground, you got to hit the X button to accept to pick it up. And that's a bit of a small annoyance on a really, really good game.
Yeah.
And, yeah, and because of the LJN Defender, I've been playing Back to the Future and Friday the 13th. And nice. He makes it look very, very easy to finish both games in his videos. I'll tell you, it's still not.
It's not.
Yeah. No, I say the same thing about Friday the 13th. I want to go back and play it after watching his video, just because I actually really like that game. And the thing about the LJN games, or really just the LJN Defender, is he's really good about pointing out that the game may not be actually developed by LJN and may be released by them. And I try to do that as well. Like, I always want to make sure that I look up the developer, because sometimes LJN will publish something that's crap, and they'll have nothing to do with it other than them just making the cart, putting the slick sticker on, slapping the game together, and be like, here you go. So
they don't get off so easy on their later releases, though.
No. True.
Well, Acclaim is another company. Actually, I think some of Acclaim's releases are worse.
Yeah.
But it's the same thing. They were just a publishing house. Yep. They didn't develop the games. Yep.
Yeah.
I guess it's my turn. Is it my turn?
Okay. Yes. Chris, you go ahead, my friend.
I've been playing Jaws on the NES. And that's another one that's like gets crapped on, but it's not bad. It's not bad.
Yeah.
You got to be patient because of that back and forth between the two harbors, basically, or whatever. You got to be patient with it, but I like it. I have a lot of fun with it. It's like a little, it's a fun little game.
To me, it reminds me of like really cheap computer freeware games. Remember them?
Yeah.
And it is very much like that. But you're right. It's very much like that. Yeah. You know, underwater. Oh, shoot, random animals. Okay, move on to the next part. It's very much like that. Speaking of, I've been playing Porky's on the Atari. You guys ever played that? It is like one of the, I think, only handful, very small handful of Atari games that they're actually, you can actually beat it. Like, there's a end, sort of, to the game.
Oh, wow.
Yeah, you blow up Porky's bar or whatever, and then you're done with the game. Like, so you, but you, it's a pain in the ass to beat it. But you, there is an end to the game. So that's one of those. I've been playing that, and what else? Gargoyles. I started playing Gargoyles a little bit on the Sega Genesis. That one's a lot of fun. Per Stu's recommendation to play it. I've played it before, but I broke it out this week after I asked the Bear Club what platformer I should play this week. That's one of them that I just pulled out just to play. I don't think anything else. I can't really think of anything else I've been playing outside of like, that's it. That's it. So,
did you play Amagana?
No, hell no. Hell no. Hell no. I won't play that game. I won't do it. That one is a crap game. That one is a really not fun to play. But it's just bad. It's a bad game. I try to find the good in every game. I really do. I really do make a point. But it plays on the Nintendo. That's probably about as good as it gets for that, I think.
I got to be able to sit down and play something and not hate it after. Like, I have such a short attention span when it comes to games. That's why when RPGs, like, I love RPGs if everything is perfect. So I have to not sit there and wait for, like, a half an hour for the game to start. Like, Final Fantasy VII. You know, you get a short cutscene, less than 5 minutes, train sequence, battle. Like, that's how RPGs should all be. It shouldn't be, like, 20 minutes of cutscenes. That's why the Metal Gear games have gotten to the point where I'm just like, alright, I just want to start playing. Like, get me past, like, I love story, don't get me wrong, but just get me past this. I want to start playing it. This is not just a movie.
So, you must have the same kind of issue that I have with Final Fantasy VIII, then.
Yeah, well, I have a different issue with Final Fantasy VIII, I got 7, right, when 7 came out, and I was like, this is fantastic, one of the best games I've ever played, and I got super hyped for 8. And so I was in high school when these games came out, when 7 and 8 came out, so when 8 came out, like, I bought all the action figures, and I bought the guide, like, before it came out, and I was like, I was so stoked. And then I get the game, and I'm like, alright, the magic system's a little bit of a pain in the ass, but whatever, I'll just roll with it. So I'm playing through the game, whatever, right? I get pretty far. I get to, like, I think disc 2 or disc 3 or whatever. And the part that made me stop, which you may want to skip this if you're listening to this for potential major spoilers. I'll pause and I'll be like, spoilers. So there's this scene where they are all at this orphanage. And they're like, why does this seem so familiar? And then they realize that because they were used, they all were, I guess, part of this orphanage together. They all lived together. They all knew who each one were. But they forgot about it because of the guardian forces that they were using, like the summons. I threw the controller. I was like, are you kidding me? I was like, that's the dumbest plot line or plot twist I've ever heard in a video game. Turned it off. Stopped playing. I even traded the game in, too. No lie. I was so angry. So then years go by, and I start collecting. Probably about 2003, I started getting a collection going, because I was working at a game store, And that's when I got, like, all my crazy Hidden Gems, like Wild Guns, for, like, $14 back in the day. And so I'm like, all right, well, let me give Final Fantasy VIII a chance. Started it up again, get to that scene. This is bullshit. Throw it. That's it. I'm done. So the third time's a charm. I've bought the game recently for $4 at Goodwill, like, a couple months back. And it's been sitting on the shelf. Well, now it's sitting in a box, but it's been sitting there patiently waiting for me to start it up again so I can throw the controller and be like, this is bullshit. So,
see, I had a different problem with that game. I think it was my fourth playthrough. I actually went through and actually finished it, but okay. I refused to change. Mm-hmm. So I played the game, and I basically just level all my characters up to 100, and I'm like, I'm just going to level up and plow through the game. But it doesn't work in Final Fantasy VIII because it actually uses the Saga Frontier leveling system, where the more you level up, the tougher the enemies yep. become.
Right.
And the real trick to that game is not leveling up at all, trying to get as little leveling as possible, mm-hmm. but drawing magic in the battles, in yeah. the boss battles, and getting the most powerful magic. That actually puts you more powerful. So I refuse to play it that way, and I just level up,
yeah,
and
yeah.
the game becomes just increasingly frustrating. So yeah. I finally gave in on my fourth playthrough, and I did the draw magic in the boss battles, and I felt cheap when it was done.
I think they were trying to just avoid grinding.
Yeah, I
would imagine.
But see, I'm a grind whore. Like
I am too.
I will start a game yeah. and I will grind up as high as I can go before I move on at all in an yeah. RPG. Like Crystallis, I will go and get one XP or MP or whatever all day long until I'm way leveled up, so I can just breeze through the rest.
Like I'm not the biggest RPG guy, but I've played a lot of them. And like, if you've played any of the Dragon Warrior games, especially Dragon Warrior 8 on the PlayStation 2, you have to grind. You have to grind right from the beginning for the game to even be playable and enjoyable.
Yeah, that's kind of the way that Lunar Silver Star Story is.
Yeah.
You start out that game in the beginning and you will die repetitively, and it's a frustrating game to start playing. In fact, I think I talked about this on one of my Nesmeries videos. Yeah. I was talking about Lunar Silver Star Story, and my little brother accidentally erased my save, and I was almost at the end. And I was like, oh, I can't believe you did that. So I was like, all right, no problem. I'll start up the game again, and I'll start over. So I start the game over, and I had forgotten how difficult it is to level up in the game. And I was like, all right, I'm done with this. And I haven't picked it up to this day. I own the game, but I haven't picked it up to this day.
There's a one game, Star Ocean 2, the second story. Like, I played it for like 100 hours. But again, I'm resistant to change. I leveled up my characters, but I didn't level up their special attacks. And that's one of the games where you have to level up the attacks too by doing them over and over again.
Right.
So I'd go into the battles and I'd just be winging my sword. I didn't do any of the special attacks. You get to a certain boss, and you just can't beat them with the regular attacks. You need to use your powered-up special attacks. So, yeah, I've got a lot of horror stories like that.
Yeah, have you ever played a Valkyrie...
Profile?
Oh, yeah, Valkyrie Profile. So Valkyrie Profile is a fantastic PlayStation 1-era game. The only thing is it's just like Majora's Mask in the sense that you have a certain amount of time to finish the game, and if you don't finish the game in that amount of time, then you have to start all the way over. And with an RPG, like, are you kidding? I just sunk 72 hours into this, and you're going to tell me that I can't beat the game now? Like,
yeah.
The game will not let you finish it unless you go through it a very specific way. So it's like, don't even bother buying the game unless you're buying the guide. Because there's no way that you can beat it. It's so, you know, all over the place. But fantastic game, fantastic music in that game, too. So you could definitely check it out.
Funny thing is that you're talking about that, and we're going to go back full circle here, because
mm-hmm.
that's actually the trick to Friday the 13th. Friday the 13th is a timed game.
Yeah.
Like, I heard someone complain about it the other day, like, oh, how good is a game if you can finish it in 2 minutes? And there's a run on YouTube of a guy who beats it in 2 minutes.
Yeah.
But that's the whole trick. You have to do everything as quick as possible. Otherwise, all the counselors are going to die, and the kids are going
right.
to die.
Yeah, that's true.
Right.
Yeah. I need to play through that game. I really do. I've attempted, like, I've gotten better as I've gotten
yeah.
older at the game, but I don't know, like, I think the last time I played, I finally realized that there was, like, a dash attack where you can, like, if you're facing off against Jason, and it's not like the 2D level, it's more like when you get into the cabin and you find Jason. I had no idea that you can, like, dodge his attacks. So for,
me
like,
too.
Yeah, so for, like, years I would just be, like, taking it to the face and being like, how are you supposed to beat this game?
NES Advantage, so, Michael.
Yeah.
I tell you guys, that's what the advantage is all about.
No, it's so easy. It's so easy without it, Chris.
No!
In fact, when I cleaned out my room, I've lost my NES Advantage. I don't know where it's to.
How do you
it's
lose
gone.
That? Like, it's not.
It's so big. Like,
I had it in one of the boxes that were over there somewhere. And anyways, I was pulling those boxes out, trying to find it before I brought everything to storage. And it wasn't there. Gone. Mm. Not a big loss.
Oh, no. Whatever.
It's a big loss from the fact that that's now a piece I don't have, like a NES peripheral that I need to get back, but other than that, I'll never use it.
I love my advantage.
The first time I watched, have you ever seen Chris's show? He does, "Hey Chris, what you playing, Mike?"
Yeah, I've seen it.
First one of those I remember really watching and being mystified was, he played Mega Man, and he was playing Mega Man 1 with the NES Advantage. I'm like, okay, the game's already hard enough, Chris.
Yeah.
The truth behind that is, well, you kind of know my, like, sappy story about why I like the Advantage, but yeah. that and the fact that I couldn't find my regular controller, and I was like, oh, I got to shoot a video tonight, and the Advantage was right there. Oh, yeah, I'll just plug that in and use it, and then you know, I mean, the platforming with an Advantage is impossible. It's yeah. pretty, it's oh, impossible. Yeah. But yeah. with Friday the 13th, it's really good because you can do the dodge. I find it easier to dodge with it, and that's, you know.
Yeah.
Since there's not a lot
there's
of...
There's some games that it works for.
Shooters.
Like any shooters, any kind of arcade-style game, but platformers, forget it. You can't play a platformer with the NES Advantage. It's just too frustrating.
Yeah, don't I know it.
Yeah, I'm with you. It's like
Mega
it's
Man.
Like, it's like playing the PlayChoice 10 or whatever, and playing Mega Man 3 on a PlayChoice 10. You're just, like, trying to, you know, hold down and right so you can dash or slide, and it's, like, impossible to do.
I do like the Mario versus Mario in the arcade. I do like playing that. I can do it one-handed. Yeah. I get through a good portion of the game one-handed.
What are you doing with your other hand, though?
That's for...
Shake weight.
Oh, gosh. Pretty much, actually. I think I was on the phone the first time I started trying that. Like, my wife was calling me. It was at MAGFest, and my wife was calling me from upstairs wanting to know where I was, and I was like, I'm in the arcade and playing Mario. Hey, I'm doing a lot better doing this one-handed than I normally do two-handed. So that's kind of how I started playing it. I do better. I don't know, that's weird, but that is what I do. All right.
That's what she said.
Well, boys, you want to wrap things up? Say goodnight? Sounds good to me.
Absolutely.
Sounds good.
Mike, it has been fantastic having you on. It was a lot of fun, and we would love to have you back on again sometime.
Thank
Hopefully
you.
We can grab Stu next time, and we can all have one big... well, you know what I'm thinking. We can just have a good time.
Sounds good. Thanks for having me.
It was a blast. So I'm going to say goodnight and turn it over to you two to say goodnight yourselves, and we'll wrap things up.
All right, guys. So thank you very much for... you know, tuning in, listening to us. If you want to know more about us, check us out on YouTube. But something we never talked about, you can find all three of us on Gamester 81.
That's true. Actually, yeah.
That is true. Yeah. Check us out at Gamester 81. Yeah. Thanks for having me again. And once again, thank you guys, everybody, for listening out there to checking out this podcast.
All right.
Yeah, Mike, thank you again for doing this. Really appreciate you
making
the time to come out and chat
Absolutely.
With us.
Absolutely.
Much appreciated.
Yeah.
On a Father's Day.
Hey, you know, you gotta make sacrifices. Actually, I just got back from New York. I was at a Mets game with my dad and my brother, so it was like one of those things. I was like, I gotta do a podcast, and I'm like driving on the highway back from New York, like rushing, and I literally made it in the door at exactly 9:30. Like, I gotta record this. So
we're glad you did. We're glad you did. All right, guys, that's it. Good night. Thanks for watching. If you want to subscribe, check it out on iTunes. The whole nine yards. You know the deal. We'll see you later. Night.